digging it. So what'd you put it in?
I like white asparagus. I like it.
It's shaved asparagus?
Uh-huh. No. It's just
does that mean it was hairy before you started?
Hi, everybody. Hello. You are listening to The Klatch at Voice of Vashon 101.9 in beautiful downtown Vashon Village. Here we are. I'm Linda Nygaard. I'll be your host today. And Susan McCabe is here with me, hosting.
I am hostess, so happy to be here with you. And where in the world is Heidi?
We don't know. I didn't pay attention or I failed to ask, but we're missing our aquatic member. I don't know where she is in the world. I know it must have something to do with water.
I wonder if she's finally become a mermaid.
Well, you'd think she'd want to announce it if she had.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, we're thinking about you, Heidi, if you're out there listening.
Wherever you may be,
wherever.
I'm sure it's wet.
I'm sure it's wonderful. So what's been going on the last couple of weeks, Susan? What you been doing?
What have I been doing? Meeting new people.
Oh, that's good. That's mm-hmm. always good.
Yes, meeting new people that I have a strange relationship with
mm-hmm.
that I may someday go into.
I think that would be fun.
Uh-huh. And finishing up the summer festivals and really kind of happy that those are wonderful and they're done. So things have been a little quieter.
Mm-hmm.
I also have been helping a friend move.
Oh,
so I feel very used physically.
I thought anybody over 40 shouldn't do that.
Yeah, somehow.
So you're 39 now.
Yeah,
so
I'm 39
you know, no
again,
more of this.
That's right. Next year, yeah. I'm done with the moving thing. So what's been happening with you the last few
well,
weeks?
Well, I understand you saw a movie that you wanted to tell me about.
I did.
Do you want to?
I can if you want to talk about that now.
Sure.
I saw The Woman King.
I've never even heard of it.
You hadn't heard of
no,
it?
No, I guess I'm, you know.
You probably will. It's getting a lot of publicity, but it is about a tribe, I think around 1823 in Africa,
mm-hmm.
in a village called Dahomey, or a kingdom actually called Dahomey in mm-hmm. Africa. Again, I'm not sure if there's historical fact here. I should check that up. Out.
Yeah.
I do believe there is some historical fact. But this kingdom was participating in the slave trade with another kingdom
mm-hmm.
in this portion of Africa, some part of West Africa. And they were being attacked by this other tribe that wanted to be more dominant and take over their slave trade.
Okay.
But they had a secret weapon, and they were called the Agoji, and the Agoji were women warriors.
Oh my.
And these women are absolutely fantastic. And they negotiated with their king that they would.
If you could see Susan here, she's gesturing and smiling. I can tell she's going to start jumping around
my
in
muscles
a minute.
Are popping out. And they, anyway, they, these women negotiated with their king that they would get out of the slave trade
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, conquer, defeat, whatever, get these other bad guys to retreat. So this movie is about how these Agoji warriors saved the kingdom of Dahomey.
Oh.
And
So I'm sorry if I missed it. Is it based on a true story?
I think it is based on a true story. And as we go through today, I'll see if I can find something about the history of it. Yes, I do think there's some historical fact to this.
Well, you were talking about the production value, too, with regard to the movie as well as the story.
It is an outstanding production. Beautifully shot. Mm. Beautifully set. Wonderfully acted. It stars Viola Davis as the woman who actually becomes the woman king. But
she
can do anything.
Yeah, she can.
And it is an all-black cast
mm-hmm.
and a primarily female production company.
Well.
Yes.
Well.
Cinematography, mm-hmm. directing, script writing, all that stuff, girls.
So we should see it.
Absolutely. Every woman of every color should see it.
Don't men want to see it?
I think men would love to see it. It's a great action film.
Yeah, that's what you said. Yeah. Well, good. Well, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
And now to answer your question about what I've been doing, you know, I've been doing a lot of different things. As you know, I spend a lot of time reading mm-hmm. and on the computer researching and looking because it's just something I love to do. But this week I had a really special gift, and it was a mule. I was down at some friend's house, and they have a mule and a horse who are the best bosom buddies you ever saw. And this big mule is very old. He's a rescue from an organization. I don't know which. I don't know all the details. But he has found a new home at a place that it's a family home where they love their animals. And it was just so wonderful. They have like six feral cats. And their feral cats have a little cat door in the barn door. And they get to go into their little condos. And they have gourmet cat food. And they have litter boxes in there just in case they don't feel like going outside at night.
And I'd like to be a feral cat.
Oh, I know. And they have rescue rabbits. And, you know, so I just spent a joyous weekend in the sunshine with all these fabulous animals. And really, I guess for me, that was the highlight of the last couple of weeks, because it just doesn't get better than that. Oh, and two dogs and two cats.
Oh.
So it was really fun. It was
a lot
really
of dust
fun.
Bunnies in the house?
Well, you know.
In sure. addition to the four-legged bunnies outside.
Yeah, right. So anyway, that's kind of what I've been thinking about. And I've been thinking a lot about the weather and the fact that we're in equinox. I know we missed the exact day, but we're still in
autumnal equinox.
Yes, I love that. And this is my very favorite month of the year. I love October. My parents were married in October. My second son was born in October. I fell in love one time in October. It's just a really good month. And a woman I know, this is kind of a shaggy dog story, but there's a woman I know from England, and I know her only over Facebook, and we've known each other probably for, I would say, 10 years, at least 8, and we've become personal friends. Well, she sent a poem the other day. She's a lovely woman who's a wonderful gardener somewhere outside of London. I don't know where she lives, because I don't know that much about England topography. But anyway, she sent this poem, and I couldn't help but think of her because she's such a little goddess of the garden and her pictures that she posts. And I just really want to share this poem with you because it's just so autumnal.
Autumnal.
Yes. Okay.
What's the title?
Oh, I should tell you a little bit about it. Oh. It was written by a woman named Gail Foster in September of 2016 for a celebration at Stonehenge, but it's a very small Druid circle that's been there for thousands of years. And they have a little tiny small celebration there every year, at every equinox, spring and fall. And this woman, Gail Foster, wrote this poem for for that particular gathering in 2016. Okay? And it's entitled, "Here Again, the Autumn Equinox. I wish you well. I'm here again. Come riding in upon the western wave. My hair all wove with golden leaves. My breast as pale as moonlight on a hidden grave. And all the sins of summer long confessed, I come again. In sweeping skirts with white swan feathers strewn to brush the summer dust from weary grass. Make ash of aspen, damp the flame of noon before the frost frees water into glass. I bring to you wind-fallen apples, berries from the hedge, long shadows on the barrows, and the chalk wild winds to stir the willows and the sedge. And mist and myth down every path you walk. I'm here again, the promise of the harvest to fulfill, the energy of autumn streaming through the swirling springs that spiral round the hill. To drench the land in red and russet hue, I come again, between the longest day and the shortest night, to fill the blood and marrow of your bones with all the orange glory of the light before the dark descend upon the stones. I bring to you a cornucopia of ripened fruit, dark juices of the vine in bottles bright, to nourish your soul and body, to transmute your thought to dream, your dream to second sight. For I am she, am autumn writ in every field and tree, am mistress of the owl and running hare. So yield unto my kiss, and blessed be, and dance with me, O Druid, if you dare."
Ooh, that is so cool.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is beautiful.
Oh, I just love it. I just
so
love
who wrote
it.
This?
Her name is Gail Foster, and she's an English woman. I don't really know anything about her.
But you don't know if she writes a lot of other poetry? Or?
Well, I didn't look her up. I'm sorry, and I should. But she I'll just say yes, she does. Look her up.
Yeah, I'm sure she's got a website. Doesn't everyone have a website?
Doesn't everybody have one? Yeah, that's right.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, we like to talk about words on this show.
Yes.
Because we like words. We're both writers. Heidi's a writer, too. Heidi, we miss you here. Where are your nasty comments and your wicked
right.
laughter?
She sometimes throws in the words that we're not supposed to say.
I know. She does a good job at that. So anyway, for our listeners here, I would just like to say we're going to kind of run a little bit of a scattery section here about words that we find interesting or somebody else found interesting. And the first thing I want to talk about is, do you know who Frank Bruni is?
Yes.
Yes. He's an essayist or an opinion guy for the New York Times. Mm-hmm. He also wrote a cookbook called A Meatloaf in Every Oven. And it's a cookbook of meatloaves. And it's a wonderful cookbook. And I love his mother's recipe for meatloaf. Anyway, so that's a little
aside. Speaking of words, meatloaf is really clear.
Yeah. It's kind of gross, isn't it?
Yeah, when you think about it, yeah.
Or meatloaf is a singer.
But as a word, with a you know, with a definition...
Loaf?
There's no question about what it is.
Right.
Except
right.
for the singer.
Right. And there is a question about what that is. Anyway, Frank Bruni, he does this thing. He encourages people to write to him with different words or different signs or different things that they've seen in their journeys around America. And there are three that he particularly liked. And these are business, names of businesses. There's an auto repair business in Western North Carolina called Recommended, W-R-E-C-K, amended. And that's from James Cassara in Asheville, North Carolina. There's a specialty grocery store in Nazareth, Pennsylvania called Cheeses of Nazareth.
I love that.
David Trachtenberg in Manhattan. And then there's a food shop in Centerton, Arkansas, with many Jewish favorites called Hallelujah Bakery.
I think that's Hallelujah.
Well, challah is how you say the bread.
Is that how you say it?
Challah.
Hallelujah Bakery. Oh, I just spit all over the microphone.
That's why we have condoms on them. Mm-hmm. So Merriam-Webster came out this year. Well, they always come out with new words. And I think... they had over 100 this year, is that right?
They had a whole lot, and they are incredible. They're kind of a map of how our society is changing. I think what most of them are words for things that we just didn't have before. So we
right.
had to use old words
right.
to make up new words. Like, what's a dumb phone?
What is a dumb phone?
A cell phone that does not include advanced software features like email or an internet browser.
Like one of the old flip phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to a smartphone. That's the whole idea.
Well, you know, some of the words that they have in there are actually two words.
Yes.
Which is kind of strange to
they're
me. I mean, that's
terms.
They're terms yeah. more than mm-hmm. words. Yeah. For instance, virtue signaling. That's a new one. And up until maybe a year ago, I didn't know what virtue signaling was.
What does it mean?
Was. Well, the act or practice of conspicuously displaying one's awareness of and attentiveness to political issues, matters of social and racial justice, etc., especially instead of taking effective action.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, I'm going to look like I'm doing something wonderful, but really, I'm not going to go out
I'm
of my way.
Just giving it lip service.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then, I don't know if you remember or not, but before we took our summer hiatus, we were having that really, really wet April or March or whatever it was, and we talked about atmospheric rivers.
Yes.
That's a new word in the dictionary.
Yes.
So it's a term, but it's a word. It's new.
And what does it mean?
Well, it's just great big rivers of water in the sky. It's... a concentrated band of water vapor that flows through the atmosphere, and that is a significant part of the global hydrologic cycle and an important source of regional precipitation. So
and
really,
so I wonder if we had these before, we just didn't have a name for them, or we didn't see them.
I don't know.
Meteorologists came up with this word.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where it came from or how long. I mean, I can't imagine that they haven't known that those big rivers of water are running through the sky.
They
probably had a different whoever they are.
The ubiquitous they.
Yes, the weather professionals.
Yeah, and then there's greenwashing, and some of the weather professionals practice greenwashing.
Tell me about greenwashing. Is that a new word?
Newly accepted in the Webster Dictionary. To make something such as a product, policy, or practice appear to be more environmentally friendly or less environmentally damaging than it really is.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, so here's a word. MacGyver.
Oh, no, I thought, I guess it's new in the dictionary, but it's one that we've used for
a long time. It's an old word. You get a MacGyver it. I MacGyver a lot of things.
It's a verb.
It's a verb. You're right. It is a verb. That's the other thing that they've done in here is they are using some nouns as verbs and some verbs as nouns.
And some work as both, as in greenwash.
They go both ways.
Yeah, that's right. So what does MacGyver mean?
Oh, you would ask me that when I scrolled past it. I don't know what they say it means.
I think
it just means sort of fix it to make, form, or repair something with what is conveniently on hand.
Yeah.
You just use what you got and fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, like the great bobby pin repair.
Or like one time I didn't have a hammer. I mean, I didn't have a snow scraper, and it was raining, or snowing, freezing, and I was having dinner with friends, and I came out, my whole windshield was full of ice. I couldn't get it. I mean, the wipers wouldn't even go. And I didn't have a scraper, and nobody was around. And so I had a hammer in my trunk.
So I smashed your window?
No, I just used the claw part of the hammer to kind of lightly scrape the ice off. It worked. It took a long
time.
Very
clever.
I was
very clever.
It was MacGyver. I MacGyvered it.
You did.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, so what else? Did you find a favorite word in there?
Oh, I found a couple. Free diving is now accepted as a word, and it means to swim beneath the surface of water, especially a considerable depth, sometimes death, without a portable breathing device, and typically with a face mask and one or two flippers. I wonder if Heidi's done that. Free
diving. Probably.
That's pretty risky. It takes a lot of good training.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so interesting when we look at the ways that we are evolving in the language. I was talking with someone this morning. We weren't talking exactly about the evolution of language, but we were talking about the devolution of handwriting. And the words that come through that, you know, she was saying that we both are writing postcards, you know, for voters. Mm-hmm. Thank you for voting.
Vote.
And I was complaining about how tired my hand gets because it's not used to cursive, you know. And she said, well, nobody even knows cursive anymore. So we were talking about how the kids aren't learning cursive anymore. And she was just, you know, incensed about it, really. And I said, yeah, I know, I wish they did, but look at how medieval English was written. We can't read that. And it was English, and it's different from...
Was it cursive or was it something?
Well, it was something else completely.
The words were completely different.
Yeah,
Was the alphabet different?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a knowledgeable person in that regard. I'm just saying that if you look back at old transcripts, they're hard to read. Or look at the way that George Washington wrote. Those are hard to read. They're different. We're writing differently now than we used to.
Yeah, and you know, I write cursive. Me too. I'm writing those postcards, and I'm not doing them in print. I'm writing cursive.
Oh, I'm not either.
So they may be totally useless.
No, people can read cursive now. It's just that they're not teaching it in school anymore.
So people can't write it.
So little kids mostly now aren't going to learn it. But I thought that was interesting. And then, you know, how the language and the words have evolved from, even in America, from region to region, and how different the words are. And I was thinking about Southern, you know, words that people have, Southern words for, like meemaw.
Meemaw?
Meemaw is grandma.
Oh.
Meemaw
in the South.
In the South. They say meemaw.
Huh.
And I hadn't heard that word for 100 years, but I just heard it again the other day. And I didn't, when I first heard it, I thought, Meemaw, where'd you get that?
You know what struck me in this whole list of new words in mm-hmm. the dictionary were the slang words.
I know.
I had absolutely no understanding of most of these, which
like
really
what?
Dates me.
Same one.
Luke.
Luke, like L-U-K-E?
L-E-U-K, E-L-E-W-K.
L-E-W-K. Okay, what is that?
It's a fashion look that is distinctive to the wearer and noticeable and memorable to others. Do you have a look? I don't know how to say it. Look?
Yeah. What else? Give me another one.
Janky.
Oh, janky. Yeah, I've heard janky.
Is junky, a very informal or very poor quality. Here's yeet. Y-E-E-T.
And what is that?
Used to express surprise, approval, or excited enthusiasm.
Wait a minute. I'm going to have to write to Words with Friends because I play Words with Friends online, and I've tried that word 100 times, and they reject it.
Well, they should accept it now. It is now in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
And then I'll win.
To throw, especially with force and without regard to the thing for the thing being thrown, that also is a yeet. That is the verb, yeet.
Interesting. You know, speaking of words we've never heard, in Philadelphia, they have their own word. It's J-A-W-N.
John.
John. And nobody else can use it. It's sort of like, that's just where it is. It's a word they use without boundaries or limits. It can be a noun. It can be a verb. It can be a thing. It can be a situation. It can be a person. You know, you can say, pass me that John. Or you can say John's, but it's more like, where'd you get them, John? If you're, you know, if somebody's got some donuts or, and I was reading this article, it said, and you will hear, oh, don't forget to bring the John to the John.
What if you don't know what they're referring to?
Well, if you lived in Philadelphia, you would.
You would know.
You would know. It's okay. Their word. And the census is that it came from joint. From New York. There's several different theories about where this word
joint
came from.
Joint as in, or joint as in place.
Joint as in, joint, that's the joint as in the place. Then it went into pot.
Pot.
The pot joint. But there was a band called the Funky Four Plus One, an early hip hop group from the Bronx. And as far as the linguists can tell, they're the first people that really used that word.
John.
Mm-hmm. And then it came up to be a very popular word in the black sections of Philadelphia. And since the 80s, it has taken over the whole city. And the word joint comes from unctus, and the French turned it into joint. I don't know why, but then
or how,
but that, but you know, the French, that's what they do. They change things. And, then it became, you know, juke joints. And so now that's a John. And what else? There's some, betting parlors, opium dens, going to the John. I just thought it was really interesting.
Well, you can cloak whatever you're trying to say using that word. And the people in the know would know what the heck you're talking about.
One of the quotes is, I have a lot of John to do for school. So it's kind of like
it sounds kind of like stuff. Things.
Stuff, thing.
The thing, yeah.
Bring the thing to the thing.
To the thing, yeah.
That's probably what it is, but it's John. And I loved the idea that it came from somewhere else and has morphed into something else. And it's only Philadelphia. You know, I love that.
Okay, there are a couple more slang words that I love. Here's one. Adorkable.
I like that one too.
Socially awkward or quirky in a way that is endearing. So, you know, the kid walking down the street.
Say the word again.
Adorkable.
Adorkable. Well, you know, everybody's adorkable at some point or another in their lives. You know? I mean, I'm dorky all the time. And sometimes I'd like to think it would be adorkable.
Adorkable. Yeah, there's adorkable and there's dork.
Yeah, well, but that's the same thing. I think dorks are really cute. I like dorks.
I have to reserve judgment on that. I would take each dork
Individual. Course you would, Susan. Yes, no blanket statements here. Got it.
I'm a journalist. Baller. Now, doesn't that sound... Yeah.
That's an old one.
You think, but it's a term, extraordinary, especially in a way that is suggestive of a lavish lifestyle. Excellent,
really?
Exciting, or extraordinary.
Balling?
Baller.
Baller.
Balling is another thing. It is a verb.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Jeez.
Let's go. Next.
Okay, any more? Shrinkflation. The practice of reducing a product's amount or volume per unit while continuing to offer it at the same price. What?
Shrink. What?
That doesn't even make sense. Shrinkflation. The practice of reducing a product's amount or volume per unit while continuing to offer it at the same price.
Oh, like the Raisin Bran box is now smaller, but it's still,
okay.
You still pay for the big box.
It's been shrinkflated.
Shrinkflated. I get it.
Okay.
Or the bottle of Tide or, any of that stuff. It used to be 8 ounces, now it's 6. Same price.
Well, and all those terms that we used with COVID have become permanent. As words, hopefully. Mm. COVID is not.
Yes, hopefully.
Here's hoglet.
What's that mean?
It's a baby hedgehog. Cute.
Oh, that is cute.
Here's one. Galentine's Day.
What are we doing on Galentine's Day?
It is a holiday observed on February 13th as a time to celebrate friendships, especially among women.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
But that's a silly word.
Galentine's Day?
Mm-hmm. That's... don't get me started.
That's about all I've got to say about words.
But, words change quickly. I mean, a word is born, becomes a word, and then somebody else uses it differently. And
I think it's a reflection of all that is changing in our culture. I think these new words have to name things that we didn't have before. And I think I'm repeating myself.
Well, also, no, you said that to me earlier.
Oh, okay.
Across the centuries, since the beginning of time, people have expressed dismay about a new word or a new way of saying things or the way the language is changing. And really, I think it's kind of fun because we can enjoy it as we reflect, as our mind's reflection of what we're able to do. How we're able to think.
It's a language is first of all a living thing, and we use it to more clearly express what's going on, mm-hmm. whether it's outside mm-hmm. or inside. The more words we have, the better we can express our true feelings or the truth of a situation.
I know. Yeah. Well, here's speaking of truth of the situation. Here's a new word that they put in there: Columbusing.
What's that?
Well, think of Columbus and the decimation and the Native Americans and what happened after him with the annihilation. And you're Columbusing the issue. You're making a Columbus Day sort of stance. You're Columbusing. And another
that sounds
one,
like greenwashing, but on a social,
perspective. But on a, yeah. Yeah, you're being, you're
sociocultural. Columbusing.
Virtue signaling Columbusing. I don't know.
All right. I think we're losing it on the word department.
I think we are too, but I do want to say one more.
Okay.
And it's a whole word now, which I'm very happy to see. Black Lives Matter. And that is in the dictionary now as one word.
So that.
Yeah. Hey, do you remember, the last time we were together, I think we asked ourselves if we were being good ancestors.
Yes.
And we talked about whether we were or not. We try. Well, I found a story about somebody in Appalachia who is being an incredible ancestor. First, I watched, do you remember the show On the Road with Charles Kuralt?
Yes.
It's old.
Yes.
We're telling our age here, but he was for those of you who don't know, he was a marvelous broadcaster and journalist whose interest was in human stories. And he traveled across the country, literally, and stopped and interviewed people in their homes and their little towns. And it was a wonderful, wonderful series. And it's on YouTube. I watched it on YouTube, which was really fun. But he sort of started my fascination with Appalachian. I've been reading a lot about it lately. He went down to Appalachia in 1963, I think it was, is the episode I watched, to interview people down there about what had happened to them since... It was at Christmas time, did I say that? What has happened to them since the coal mines closed. And I'm telling you, Susan, it was one of the saddest things I've ever seen. I mean, they went... People in the... They're living really in horrible conditions with no running water. And one of the stories was that there was a dad of... a father of three or four and his wife living in a tiny, tiny little cabin. And he had been a coal miner for a smaller coal company. And the mine was very small and they closed it because the big companies came in and were buying everything. But this little mine wasn't of their concern. It wasn't good enough for them. So he lost his job. There were no other jobs. And now what he was doing was mining himself, that little mine, by the bucket to heat his home and stove for his family. And they had no resource. There was nothing. So then I started looking at more Appalachian. I'm thinking, oh, it's just so detrimental. It's just so sad. And then I came across a story that, not that we can't devote some time to what the coal mining industry has done to people's lives. That's the whole thing
that stirs my soul.
However, there's a man down there who is being the best ancestor that you've probably ever heard of. He, across Appalachia, he and some foresters are trying to reintroduce a hybrid version of the American chestnut tree. And the American chestnut tree was almost completely demolished in Appalachia during coal mining because, you know, they ripped them up and they pretty much decimated that particular tree because there was also a Chinese tree or a Japanese tree a chestnut tree that had been imported and it passed a fungus onto the American trees.
Oh.
And so what's happened quite some time ago is that scientists decided to see if they could blend these trees to make them American chestnuts resistant to the fungus.
Oh.
And so they've done that. They're very happy about what they've done. And I don't know this guy's name. I wish I did.
So it's fungi resistant chestnut
yes,
tree.
Yes, and he's planting thousands and thousands and thousands of trees. And of course he's got help. But someone said to him, I don't know why you're doing this. I mean, it's a lost cause. You know, look at the holes and the clear cuts and the horror. It's just nothing's ever going to be the same. And he said, oh, you know, I'm not really looking at right now. I'm looking at 80 or 100 years down the road.
What a good idea.
Oh, my goodness. It was like, oh, man, who else is doing that besides Greta?
Greta Thunberg.
You know, people, that's the good ancestor stuff. That is the good ancestor stuff.
That is good ancestor stuff.
And so now, currently, with the coal mining thing, I haven't had time, really, or inclination to do a lot of research on it because I just say mansion.
Yes.
And his millions, you know. Interestingly enough, West Virginia didn't experience the same kind of losses that a lot of coal mines did in other states recently, last couple of years.
And is that due to mansions?
Well, you can draw your own conclusions.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't know. But anyway, I was really happy to read that. And now there will be American chestnuts again. And they were prized in Native American meals. And in the early settlers, you know, they picked them all and put them under their pillows and roasted them at Christmas. And it's a real tradition down there. And so I think that's going to help some people feel better, I hope.
Like maybe things are coming back. Well, yeah, and I'm looking at an article about the coal industry in Appalachia. And it says here, for 50 years, economists and researchers have warned the coal industry would permanently wane and political leaders continue to offer hollow promises about its prospects for a comeback in the future.
Right. I read that too.
And, you know, those jobs aren't going to come back.
No.
We're not going to use coal. And we've known that for 50 years.
Well,
we should have been training those people to do other things.
Which is what the government said they were going to do back in the 60s. They made a promise to these people. And so these families are a little jaded, you might say. They're not expecting much from Biden. And I hope he's able to help them.
Yeah, he probably can, but it's not something that's going to happen overnight.
No, so what's the man going to do who's digging the coal, you know, for his family's heat? What's he going to do? That's not going to help him.
Right. He needs a job. Or
money.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a home.
Maybe just welfare. For
yeah.
now.
For now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, the retraining thing, I think, is a really important issue that I don't pretend to understand.
You know, I've often thought that these industries where jobs have been lost, these polluting industries, essentially, where jobs have been lost, couldn't those be turned around to be eco-friendly, environmental restoration jobs? And an organization here on Vashon Island called the Alliance for Tompatika did that in Indonesia.
Really?
They turned the folks who were poaching the Maleo bird and turned them into guardians of the
Maleo
bird.
What's a Maleo bird? Do you know? Have you looked at it?
You can find a picture of it. Look, Google a Maleo bird, but they look kind of like a fluffy, fancy chicken.
Oh, they do.
And they bury their eggs in the sand on the beach. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty easy to steal.
Indonesia, is that what you
said? Indonesia,
yeah.
In Sulawesi, Indonesia.
Mm.
And the folks who are part of Aalto went over there and found ways to help work with the government to turn these folks who were poaching, because they needed something to make a living, into stewards of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they get paid to do that. And the Maleo bird has come back along with turtles that they've also been trying to save.
Wow.
So I don't know why we couldn't do the same thing in West Virginia, in Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
Turn these folks who were coal miners into environmental restorers, if you will.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why we can't do that. It's this America.
It's politics.
America.
You know?
It's not about instant gratification. I mean, you know, environmental work is not about instant gratification.
Oh, but it's going to be about instant destruction pretty quick.
It is. The planet is burning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I don't know if this makes a sense to talk about this next, but I wanted to tell you about some whale temples. Do you know about
whale temples?
Whale?
Okay, the visual that
have. Not on their head. Not
no, I have a vision of whales in an underground pagoda.
It's a new religion.
In a temple.
It's a new religion. No, in Vietnam, there are ancient whale temples. Temples, in other words, temples built for the whale in southern Vietnam and, really all over the country. And they were discovered not very long ago by a man who just went digging one day, and he found this temple, and he found a whale, and he found the bones. And then, you know, then he went on to explore and map out many, many of them, which for over two centuries have appeared. And the reason that they appeared is from a story of in 1806, there was a Vietnam fisherman out fishing. No, I'm lying. He was fighting a great battle. Maybe it was with a fish. But anyway, he prayed to God or to his gods or whatever to please rescue him and get him home safely, because he wasn't ready to die. And suddenly, two whales jumped out of the water and lifted his boat and took it to shore.
Ooh.
So then he turned into the king, of course, and told everyone that whales from now on will be sacred and we will worship the whales. So what has happened from that is we're getting a whole lot of ecological information from 200-year-old whale bones. They have even found evidence of whales that they didn't know existed.
Like new species.
A new something that doesn't exist anymore, but that used to. And they have ceremonies. They do candle lighting and incense and praying. And the whale is a very sacred, sacred creature in Vietnam. And I had no idea about that.
It says, Lang Ong Tai Tuong, the temple to the god of the sea, is one of 1,000 or more such shrines on Vietnam's 3,260 kilometer coastline.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think whales, dolphins.
That's the other thing. Since in the olden days, they tended to think of anything with a fin that sort of looked like a whale was a whale. So dolphins' bones are in there and some other.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So
they're able to do a lot of research on a lot of different creatures that are in those piles of bones. And they have a museum where they have reconstructed what they think is the original whale from the original story.
The first ever whale?
No,
from the story of the... So we're thinking this story was real?
Apparently. I mean, he became the king, and then it tells me in the article about how it was at a time when Vietnam was still two countries, two different cultures.
North and South. Well, there's
I don't
north
know
and
it was
south
North
Vietnam,
and South,
yeah.
But it was right before Vietnam became Vietnam. And then, so, you know, it said it was true. So...
It was on the internet. It must have been true.
It came from Atlas Obscura, which is quite a good reference magazine.
Atlas Obscura.
It's a wonderful website if you want to ever just get...
That sounds cool.
...odd stories.
Just the title in and of itself sounds like fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, in Native American culture, the whale and the dolphin are considered... spiritual communicators.
Mm-hmm. I knew that there was a lot of Northwest Native American legend, lore, facts, and stories around whales, and I don't know that much about it. I'd like to know more. I see so much art honoring the whale.
The whale.
And, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did find out, as a reflection of our earlier conversation, that there is... historical foundation to the movie The Woman King.
There is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's about the Agoji, the all-female warrior unit that protected the West African kingdom of Dahomey. There really was such a place during the 17th to 19th centuries. And this film was set in the 1820s. And Viola Davis is a general who trains the next generation of warriors to fight.
I want to see
anyway.
It.
Oh, it's really cool.
I wonder
it's
if it's
really
coming
cool.
here. We'll have to look and see if Eileen has it coming in.
I don't know. We'll see. It says it's opening only in theaters. So we're about to run out of time, but I wanted us to wish a Shana Tova to our Jewish friends.
Yes, it's the last day of Rosh Hashanah, I think.
I think you're right. Today is the last day of Rosh Hashanah.
Yes, it
which
is.
Which is...
Jewish New Year.
The Jewish New Year. Yeah. And it commemorates the creation of man. I'm going to say humans.
Okay, Susan, you do that.
the months in the Jewish practice, months are numbered, starting with the spring month of Nisan, not the car, making Tishrei the seventh month, and that's this month.
Mm-hmm.
So the first day of the new calendar year was September 25th.
Right, and today's the 27th, I think.
It's a two-day celebration.
Yeah.
Not always. Not every Jewish tradition celebrates for 2 days, but it is essentially a two-day tradition. And... interesting. I found this interesting. It said, Rosh Hashanah is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, Judaism's founding religious sect, and it appears under different names in the Bible. So they're saying that it really wasn't established till about the 6th century BC.
Wow. You know, I think it would be so interesting to have a Jewish scholar that could answer all the questions we have. I love the history and all of the things that they do and know that as Gentiles we don't.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this, according to tradition, God judges all creatures during the 10 days of awe between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, deciding whether they will live or die in the coming year. Jewish law teaches that God inscribes the names of the righteous in the Book of Life and condemns wicked to death on Rosh Hashanah. People who fall between the two categories have until Yom Kippur to perform teshuvah or repentance. So, you know, I was raised Catholic. All you have to do is go to confession and get your sins taken care of. You're not up there in the Book of Life forever as a bad person.
Well, I was raised as a Lutheran, and we didn't get any second chances.
You didn't?
No, we didn't get to go to confession. We always talked about that when we were kids. It was like, we really want to be Catholic because we can do all this bad stuff. And then we can just go tell the priest about it and it'll all be over and it'll be okay.
Well, what happens when you do bad stuff?
Well, you just go to hell.
That's it?
Yeah. I mean, well, you get in trouble and go to hell. I mean, Lutherans are very by the book. You know, Martin Luther, it's very stoic. There's little emotion. And it was always called upon that they worship statues. I loved it that they could talk to Mother Mary. I thought it was a magical religion. And even since I've grown up, I love the pomp and circumstance of the Catholic religion.
Oh, yeah. I was raised Catholic, and I love ritual.
Yeah, I do. I love ritual.
I haven't lost it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that's probably where you first came across ritual, really, for most of us, is in church.
Yeah. I'll tell a story about my older son. When he was 15, I was studying Native American religion. So I had those books around.
Yeah.
And we had two finches, little blue and yellow finches, who both died about the same time. And I couldn't find the bodies.
Oh, dear.
I couldn't figure out what happened to the bodies. So I asked him if he had seen them, and he said, well, yeah, I burned them on a beer that I created, and then I ate their ashes. Because he wanted their spirits.
Oh, did he really do that or was he teasing you?
No, he really did.
He did it because it was in the book.
Yeah, he found it somewhere in something
goodness.
I had left lying around.
But I love that.
Yeah, every time I tell this story, all I can think about is dry mouth.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of clicking my tongue. Yeah, I need a drink of water now.
But he got the spirit of the finches.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. He's got the spirit of the finches. We all need
all
that.
All kinds of traditions.
I know. I have to think about what kind of ashes I want to eat next. Like, what spirit do I want in there? We're coming up to the season of spirits here pretty soon.
We are.
Day of the Dead, my favorite holiday.
Oh, yeah. Dia de los Muertos. Sí. I love that. Yeah, and Halloween.
Es mi favorito.
Say it again.
Es mi favorito. It's my favorite.
Es mi favorito.
The holiday of ever. It's my favorite of any holiday. But you know what? I have to tell you something. I'm going to be gone the whole month of October. So you and Heidi are going to be on your own.
We're going to have to
clatch it. Yeah, you can clatch it.
Yeah, we can clatch it.
You can MacGyver it. we can. Yeah, I have an adventure awaiting me. And I'm not quite ready to talk about it yet.
Okay.
But I'll tell you about it when I get back, I suppose, for our first episode in November. And for those of you who might be thinking this is something untoward or scary, it is not. This is a high adventure of, well, how big are the proportions? I don't know. Epic. I hate
epic.
That word. It's
epic.
It's epic. It's awesome. Yeah. So.
So you're going to be gone for both of the October Clatch episodes?
I am. And, you know, maybe Chris Austin will come in and make you laugh.
Chris Austin makes me laugh when he walks in the room.
I know. I'm ready. I'm ready to laugh at him. With him. So for him.
At him.
At him. Yeah. Hi, Chris.
That's what my best friend used to say to me. I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing near you.
Yeah.
That's what they call a left-handed compliment.
Yeah, it is. So, do we have time for me to just say one more thing?
We do.
Okay, so there's a big headline. Super Earths are bigger, more common, and more habitable than Earth itself. And astronomers are discovering more of the billions they think are out there. And this is about discovering planets that are orbiting outside of our solar system. 30% larger than Earth. They live in their own galaxy. They're called exoplanets. And Earth is still the only place that the universe scientists know to be home to life. But it's fairly logical, you know, that there's evidence on some of these of water. I don't know how they tell that, but that's their... And based on current projections, about a third of all the exoplanets are super Earths, meaning they're about, the nearest is only 6 light years away. And then they go out from there. And to me, talking about religion, we're talking about religion and what you believe and what you don't believe in Native American. And we've just talked about all that stuff this hour, essentially. And now you look at the fact that there are, you know, other quote-unquote Earths out there, which science has said isn't possible for so many hundreds or thousands of years, but their ideal targets to search for real life is that one of the reasons that they're easy is because they're so big, and now the telescopes and the satellites and the things are beyond anything we can imagine, and they're way out there.
So I think there are a whole lot of people we should send there. If it's bigger, there's room for them.
Well, that's true.
Our big problem here is overpopulation, folks. So I could think of a whole lot of people to send there, especially people who could be taxied by Elon Musk.
I can think of a couple, yeah. Well, you know... simulations, this is something that I learned, simulations suggest that long-term habitability of Earth is not inevitable. And humans are literally lucky to be alive. Well, think about that? It.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
So,
and if the Earth is a living being, she's using ourselves to sort of cull the infestation of humanity that is... making her really uncomfortable.
Well, you know, it used to be when you heard the term the planet's burning, it was sort of like, you know, 20 years ago. And now the planet is burning.
It is.
You know, it was so smoky here yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me lots of allergies. And well, we're just about out of time here.
We are about out
really
of time.
Fun.
And it has
Thank
been
Thank you, Susan.
Fun.
It was really fun chatting. Good to get caught up. And to all of y'all out there, I guess I'll see you in November. Susan and Heidi will be here in October.
We'll be here saying bad words, but I'd like to close
with
Shana Tova.
Okay.
Which is
good year to
good
all
Good year
of you.
To all of us.
Yes, Shana Tova.
Shana Tova. Sounds like a pop singer.
It's Shana. Ooh. Here we go.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks,
Jess. This
is really good. Bye-bye.
I'm digging it.
So what'd you put in this?
I like white asparagus, though, I think.
It's shaved asparagus?
Uh-huh. It's just
Does that mean it was...